This is Annie Poncherelli interviewing Adelaine Midget on September 19th, 1991. Adelaine, just to start out the interview, why don't you go ahead and tell me the date you were on campus and how you were affiliated with the university, and we'll go from there.
Well, okay. From 1929 to 1933, I was a student, and I graduated in 1933. I don't really want to tell you what I took. Or
sure, yes, yes.
And well, I will tell you one thing. When I was a student, 1929 to 1932, there were probably 1,100 to 1,200 students on campus. That was it. And I was interested in library work. And at that time, if you happen to be a junior in the right year, you could take library courses. And actually, I graduated in what's called library economy. And it just happened that starting in 1929, in 2 years, they were starting the library courses. And so I actually graduated in what's called library economy. And some very strange things. Now, if you find any listing for me, it will list me as graduating in English, and I did not graduate in English. I graduated in library economy, and it was not an accredited library school. And this was primarily because the instructors were all people who had to work full time at the library in addition to teaching the courses. And of course, that was not the way it can be. But I always felt that I had maybe a better background in library science than some of the people that I got later when I actually was interviewing people for library jobs when I was on campus, because of the requirements. They really required like two foreign languages, a minor in one of them, and another one that you know we could use in cataloging or something like that. And we had to have so much history and so much English, and really quite definite requirements in order to graduate in library economy. And I think there were only about maybe 9 people who graduated in library economy. It was a very small class. Well, it had to be because Catherine White was the reference librarian, so she taught the reference courses in library work. And she was really a tough teacher, but she gave you a really good background. And the other people were all people who worked at the library, who taught the classes. And I graduated at a really bad time. 1933, there just weren't a lot of jobs. And fortunately, I got a job in Fort Benton. They had a Carnegie Library there, and I had 2 librarians, and I was the assistant librarian. Okay. So I worked there for about 2 years, and then I got married. I married the coach.
Oh, at Fort Benton?
Yep. And then we left there. Well, I did some school library work at Schottel and some at Harleton, various places that we lived, and then eventually we moved back to Missoula. And when I got back to Missoula, somebody, a friend of mine, wanted me to ask me to do something about St. Pat's School of Nursing Library. At that time, St. Pat's had a school of nursing. And so I went down there and did some work down there, and eventually they hired me to work. I had kind of strange hours and so forth, and so I could be home with my kids because I had 2 boys at the time. And after that, there was an opening at the University Library, and Kathleen Campbell was the head of the library, the head librarian, and so I was interviewed by her, and I got catalog. And that's where I stayed. And eventually I was a head cataloger, 78, and I retired. And I just felt that the university really, really gave me a good background. You know, I really could handle it. Well, if you want to know why I went to the university, I had two older brothers and a younger brother and a sister. And all five of us went to the University of Montana, and we all graduated from the University of Montana.
Great. Now, are you from Missoula originally?
I was living here. Actually, my parents, my dad was a salesman for a clothing concern, so it didn't matter a whole lot if he lived. We were living in Great Falls. Well, my oldest brother came to the university, and then when the second brother was ready for the university, we moved to Missoula because it was easier as long as we were all ready to go to college. So we moved here in 1927, I think it was, or 28, and we all ended up going to the university. Mm-hmm.
Throughout your years, and certainly we can refer to the questions on the sheet too, but I'm sure you noticed a lot of changes.
Oh.
And you probably most specifically saw a lot of changes in technology, with library systems and things.
Oh,
why don't you talk about some of the changes that you've witnessed?
Well, I get a little bit, I was out at the University Library about a week or 10 days ago, and I told one of my friends out there, I really get upset because all this technology, see, has passed me by. I have been retired, and I don't know how these things, oh, you keep saying, you wouldn't have any problem. But, you know, you really feel like you got left behind, you know, because I retired at 78, and so much of the automation has taken place since I retired. And so it really has changed, because cataloging is so much easier now, just so much easier. So it there's really a big change there. I'll tell you one big change. I think that the tuition when I started was something like $28.50 a quarter. I'm pretty sure that's it. And that's a big change. I looked up in a college catalog because I was just interested, and one of the things that was down for a requirement back in, say, 1928 or something like that, was you had to be 16 years old, at least 16 years old, to enter the university, and of good moral character. I really love that. Because I don't think they check moral character anymore. Oh, it's really... president of the university when I was there was President Cornett, and I think he was still there when I graduated in 1933. There was an acting librarian when I was there, Winifred Pfeiffer, and she was a little, she was short, and you know, she just was not pretty at all, but she was the dearest person, and I loved her. When I started out there, I went 1 year, and then the next fall, there are already two brothers out there, and those were the years of depression at that time, and there just wasn't even money for me to go that fall quarter, and so I decided that, well, I just had to work, and maybe I could make it if I could find some work. So my second brother was in forestry, and those fellows who were in forestry always had some work because there were book houses that time all over, and so he always had a job. And he came back from his lookout and wanted to know if I was in school. And, pay her tuition next quarter and she's going to school. So I went out to see if I could find a job at the university, and I'm not going to say where I interviewed first, But I went into business office, really, to see if I could get a job, and I could take shorthand and make a check. And I just was just turned down flatly. There was absolutely no chance of a job. And so I was interested in the library work, so I went over to the library, and Winifred Fagner was the one who interviewed me, and I told her that I needed a job. And I said, you know, this is my first interview for any kind of work, and I was really, I didn't know how to be interviewed or what to say, and I was scared. And I never will forget, she looked at me and she said, well, I think we can find work for you here. And I think I got 35 cents an hour. And I just came home walking on air because I had a job.
And that was during the Depression years,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was really tough. I, of course, my sister is 10 years younger than I am. And she just doesn't want to hear these stories about how tough it was. But we kids didn't know it was that tough, because almost everybody was in the same boat, you know. Everybody was getting along on practically nothing, and she disputes the fact that then I had about 3 outfits to wear to school, and but that's the truth. That's about the way it was, because you know, 5 kids in the family, and
well. Let's go back to some of the changes, and I know you had talked about the you know, the technical changes and the technological changes. What about changes just on the campus and some of the social attitudes?
Well, it's just changed so much. You know, when I was there, with only 1,100 to 1,200 students there, I think there were something like 10 sororities on campus at that time. And I'm sure there were 10 or 11 fraternities, and you know, that's dropped way, way down. And so when I was there, lots of students belonged to the sororities and fraternities. Because if you just stop and figure it out, you know, with that many and so many members, right, all students belonged. And the social part of it was so much involved with sorority and fraternity, if you belong to it. There were mixers on campus, of course, but most of the other social affairs were actually more firesides, and I think everybody had one formal quarter or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of social life. And as far as students really being that much interested in world affairs and everything, kids went to school and I just can't believe it was just a different kind of a world. It really was. And I can't remember all the kids really being that gung-ho about social issues and such. And we had very few foreign students. And I think only just very few black. Maceby Wright was in the school. And I remember a black girl, and I remember her from class, and I don't remember her name, and really, they're just kids like that on campus. Hmm. So social standards. There was a dean of women, there was a dean of men, to keep things on the up and up, I guess.
Now, was that Burley Miller and?
Burley Miller and Dean Stedman, I think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, girls had to be in at such and such a time, and fellows too. And I remember my oldest brother got on social pole. Because he kept a girl out too late, so he was on social pro. And actually, when he when he finally got, I never will forget it, when he got off the social parole, his fraternity had a dance, and it was too late to get a date. He took his sister. Well, that doesn't happen unless you're desperate. But that wasn't so surprising with me. I was very But you know what I feel about the university is that, see, when they talk about, you know, we've had to do this and we've had to do that, and it's not that great. I think it is, because my oldest brother had an additional year. He didn't get a master's, but he did get an additional year. The second brother just graduated, and so did I. My youngest brother, got a scholarship and went on and got a PhD at in Appleton at the Kimberly Clark thing, and he worked there for many years. And my sister became a dietitian and had to take an extra year in the East. So you know that they really have, I think, the incentive to go on and do things. And it's an interesting thing because when my older son was here a couple of years ago, we were up at the lake, and we got to talking about careers and girls and women and what they do and everything now. And I had never thought about it. But Doug, my older son, looked at me and he said, how many of the girls that you were in high school with went on to college? And you know what? I couldn't think of a lot of them who went on to college. And I couldn't believe it. Some of them that I had been going to school with and been friends with did go on to college. He said, how many of them graduated? And I said, well, I just don't remember how many of them graduated. And he said, you know, you and my sister too, he said, you two had careers. And how many girls your age at that time really had a career? And it's a wonderful thing to fall back on, you know. You just read about these girls, can't do anything, and they're, you know, fine. But it was interesting because I never thought of it. He said, well, when girls went to college back then, they didn't even worry about whether they graduated. They were quite interested in going to college and maybe getting married. And that was the trend. That's what they were fit. But I was a little bit older. I was 2 years old. And I worked 2 years before I got married. And my sister, she had the extra year and also worked as a dietitian for a year. So she was 2 years before she got married. It's so different than a lot of girls at that period in time.
Oh, I know one thing too, Ellen, that I meant to follow up on. Mm-hmm. When you were talking about some of the traditions on campus when you were a student, and also when you were a faculty member, you had mentioned fireside dances, mm-hmm. and some of the formal dances. What were some of the other traditions that you recall?
Mm-hmm. Well, they always had in the spring. I don't think they still do it. They had a lion parade, and it was the women students that put it on. And it was at graduation time, and they had a lion parade, which went right on the open. Mm-hmm. And it was very pretty. And they used to have, believe it or not, a May Queen in Emma Bravo Robinson. Was the queen 1 year, and I was an attendant. I remember that, and that is that sounds so silly now.
Now, did the students choose the May Queen, or was that something that
I
was
think
chosen
it was the women.
I know Emma. I interviewed her.
Oh, did you?
Now, I know one thing, when I was at the reunion, they had talked about the bear paws and the spurs.
Oh, they had
bear
paws.
Some of those
spurs
that they don't have anymore.
Yes, that's right. That was something that was for the spirit of the university, mm-hmm. the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an honor to be a member of it. I was a member of it. It was. I had friends. Mm-hmm. But, and, you know, with the 1,100 to 1,200 students, everything is so different. You just don't have the same, really. I think you knew an awful lot of people, there's no question about that. But once you get to the university, very close friendships for most people who are already in the dorm. So you do form. You form other friendships when you go to the university.
Who are some of the people that stand out in your mind as making the most impact on your life during those years? Whether it was a student or a faculty member or a co-worker?
Well,
or
actually, it was the people who were teaching the library courses, mainly in my life. And an English teacher who was here for many, many years, Ms. Merriways, was outstanding. She demanded so much of you. And when you look back, you wish you had, you know, you look back and you think, why didn't I even do more? Because she was so good. And I had a German teacher, Mrs. Weisberg, who was very good to me because I think she got me through German. Well, working, you know, and going to school and everything was a little bit rough. And I didn't spend the time. I just didn't have the time to spend it in German. She was so good to me. Got through it anyway. I think I got through on a C, which wasn't very good. But it seems to me that's what it was. And I would say mostly that these people were actually librarians who just really... Miss Faulkner was replaced. She replaced was my favorite. She was replaced, said librarian, by a Philip Keeney. And I think that was my last year that he was there. I don't think he was there. And I can't remember what happened to him. He apparently was a radical. And you just didn't have radicals on campus in those days or you were going to get in trouble. And either he had the option to retire, you know, to quit, or else he was fired. I'm not sure. He was a real tall fellow and he was a very homely man. He really was. And he was tall. I think he taught one course, maybe to us. And when I was applying for a job and I was going to graduate, I took a letter in to him and he just tore it apart. And I will say, he helped me get a good letter of application out. And he impressed on me one thing that I have never forgotten. So I guess he was good in his way. He said that you have to learn to live with the people you work with regardless. You're going to have to live and with some people and work with them, and you may not like them, and you may not... He said that most of the people who failed in their jobs just couldn't get along with people. And I've never forgotten it, because I have to work with somebody. I shouldn't even tell this. My first job, I had to work with somebody who did not have a library degree. Lots of times that happens, you know, in those days, if somebody had some library courses, they could go to a job as a librarian. And she was difficult. And when I applied out at the university in Canada, I had a resume where I had worked and everything, and she saw where I had worked and with whom. She said, well, if you got along with her for 2 years, you can get along with anybody. So she knew her because she had worked with an extension line guy afterwards. Okay. So you know. But even though I didn't care for Mr. Peeney, he did teach me one thing. Lesson. Mm-hmm. I was not involved in very many activities because I was doing it. I was together every time. And the one funny thing that happened was that one we had to have 2 years of physical, yeah, I guess it was. And one of them was actually bow and arrows, you know, just plain old bow and arrows. And they did our scores from the physics. They did our scores, and I think five of us ended up making a team, but we never did anything. We just made a team, and I couldn't believe it when I got word that they wanted to take a picture of these people who had made the team. And so I got my picture taken with them people, and that is the most ridiculous thing that happened to the university. But I actually did not do a whole lot on campus.
Do you remember, actually one of the things I wanted to ask, on some of the one here that talks about your classes, and you talked about a couple of those, but are there any other classes or teachers who stand out in your mind? Does that stand out?
No, I don't think so. You know, I took education classes, and believe me, that's one thing I did not like.
Why is that?
The education classes were just deadly. They were absolutely deadly.
How so?
I just can't explain it. I'll tell you one thing. I had thought a little bit about teaching. But believe me, I had quite a few education courses, and I wouldn't have taken my practicum for anything because I would have gone and done anything. It just never inspired me to go out and teach at all. Mm-hmm. They were. And you know, that went on for a long time. For a long time. Okay. They were just cut and dried. They were sterile. They were bad, of course. I'm sure they're a lot better now. Hmm. I think that's the only courses I took. It just left me absolutely cold.
What were some of your goals as, and this may or may not be applicable, but later on in 3 years as a librarian, but just some of your goals or philosophies when you were working at the university? Did you have an idea of things that you wanted to see accomplished? Or
well, let me ask when I was faculty member. I certainly wanted to see, I knew that automation had to come, you know, it had to come. Of course, we just didn't have the money at the time that I was there, but it was talked about a lot, and especially in the last couple of years when I was head of the Catholic Department, we really explored all the possibilities. And one thing was to get rid of the card catalog and have it all, you know, so that it would all be on printouts, or I don't mean printouts, but I mean little individual screens like they have now at the public library, and it's about to come. Mm-hmm. Because the card catalog is a big headache. You have to file in it every week, you know, and it, look at the space it takes up. Every few years you shift, you have to shift the whole card catalog because you get a whole new set because you run out of room. So you get another piece of furniture. And that will all go by. And I know some people don't like the idea. They like the card catalog. But if you ever have to maintain it, it's terrible. And that's the most wonderful job sometimes getting to maintain the content. And I tell you, the filing is just endless. It's tiresome. There's nothing very inspiring about filing a card catalog. And so I'll be real happy when I accomplish that. But it's been a long time coming because we talked about it. So I'm glad to see that happen. And get students to use the library. Because you can't imagine the students that get to be juniors and seniors even, who suddenly discover that the library is just lots of material, and they just become inspired in what they're doing when they finally find out what there is there. And it's just really, I don't know how you do it, see, because we've had orientation courses, and it's just something they have to take, and when they're freshmen, and it doesn't inspire them at that time, apparently. I just don't know. That's the same thing, because there's so much material there. And what we had to do, it didn't mean I was in the catalog all the time. We had to take usually one weekend a quarter that we had to work on records, which was good for us because we found out what students were asking about and what they needed, and it helped us actually in our work. And I always enjoyed working because you were actually working with the students and you got their questions and you tried to help them. And that's rewarding. Sometimes you get so kind of into a routine that you kind of forget that some of the things that maybe you wanted to do at one time, and you just are settled into administrating and so forth, and there doesn't seem to be time to do some of the things you want to do. But I really have a really good. Good job for the first time. I want to stay there.
What were your greatest accomplishments during your years at the university? Whether as a student or a faculty member, both?
Boy, that's a challenge. I'd say I guess just to graduate when I was a student. It was important to get out and start earning some money. It really was, because times were still pretty tough. And I don't know what it would be when I was a faculty member, but really, I had an interesting, this is funny, but one of the faculty gave me, because I was speaking up, I guess, about things, started calling me Tiger. And he still calls me that when he sees me. And I never got out from under it. And when I retired, I came back to my desk one day, and the notice had gone out from the dean when I was married to him. I came back, and here was this picture on my desk, and he was in the AV, so they had made this picture of a tiger. And the tiger was just grinning like everything, and here was this little guy, and he was washing the stripes, and it was a tiger, and he was crying. And I have a picture in my family room. So I made wonderful friends. And when I was on the faculty, I did quite a few things in the library field. I was the the representative from Montana for the American Library Association. And I belong to the Pacific Northwest Library Association, and I was president of the Montana Library Association. And did things that were actually in the library field, which was really interesting. You met people from the world. One of the toughest things, I think, is interviewing people for jobs. You just don't know. People on paper look so good sometimes. And in most cases, hiring catalog libraries wasn't so difficult with the staff that did the typing and so forth, but to actually cataloging jobs, there never was money, you know, to bring a person in. You hired them, right? But they were on paper. And you just maybe I made a couple of mistakes, maybe I didn't. I don't know. It's hard.
What were some of the other challenges you had?
Oh, keeping up with the backlog, with the number of people we had, you know. When I took over, there was a tremendous backlog. It was a head catalog library. And that's, we just made that our first priority, get rid of that backlog, because that's terrible with the faculty if you've got these books that aren't out there for the people to use. And we did. It was a cooperative staff, and we did. We cleared it up. And I had interesting, at two different times, I had Chinese catalogers. Two different ones. One of them was a very quiet person and a very reserved person. And never did, she did her job very well, but she was never, she never mixed that well. And then we had Grace Lauer, who was just brilliant. She was a good catalog. Her husband was, I think he was a wood chemistry or something like that. And he was working there, and Grace was there. And she was there. And it's kind of fun to have somebody like that. Actually, she was Taiwanese.
If you had the chance to go back in time, what would you want to do? Or what would you do differently, or what memory or experience would you want to remove?
Oh! I don't know. That's a tough question. Well, I would still be in the world, because I wouldn't want to, I mean, I was married when I had a husband here at this work, and I couldn't, you know, change at one time. I would maybe have liked to go into another area, you know, instead of being in the same place. But that's something that couldn't happen then, but maybe, you know, in different circumstances, I probably wouldn't have stayed there. And I don't mean that I wanted to do it, but when I look back, I think it would have been really interesting to have gone to a different part of the country.
Well, you'll probably think of all kinds of answers.
Yeah, I will, you know. I just didn't know what to expect, and so, I don't know. I don't think I've done very well with this.
Oh.
Oh, I don't think so.
Oh. What period of time was your favorite or most memorable?
Well, I guess, I think I would say coming back and starting to be a faculty member at the university was pretty rewarding, really. To think that my little old BA degree got me out there and got me a job. And I remember Bob Panzer was the one who okayed my my rank to associate professor. And it was a real struggle because, you see, most librarians have to have that this year. And you see, I didn't have it this year because I graduated out here and it was my fifth year in library science. But most of our people, or a lot of our people, have that fifth year. And so when I started, I was an instructor, and when I, well, I don't apply for it, but your dean does for you after so many years as an instructor, you should move up or else there's something wrong with you. And my first application was turned down to be an assistant professor, and I'm not sure about the second, but anyway, I finally became an assistant professor. And librarians had, we had a real fight with the faculty, with the Senate, faculty Senate, to have them treat librarians on the same basis that they did other faculty members. Because, you know, they expect faculty members to produce, to write, and so forth. They have to write, they have to do this. Well, librarians had a 40-hour week. I mean, you didn't have classes and you didn't have anybody to help you with research if you wanted to do it. And so, we worked hard at the university to convince those people that the situation was different, a little bit different for us. We didn't have the time to write and do things like that because we had our job. And if we did take time off, the whole thing was waiting for us when we came back. Nobody took our place while we were gone. I mean, everything piled up while we were gone. And we finally got, they were doing a lot of things to set up salaries, you see, according to rank. And we just wanted to be treated on the same basis as the rest of the faculty, and that was a real difficult fight. And I don't know how they're doing now. I really don't. I think they do better because of the union out there. You know, they just about have to. But when the dean put me up for associate professor, well, I knew I could never make full professor because I didn't have that fifth year. I didn't worry about it, frankly. But they're just, even though I've been active in library organizations, I still have not written. I've not written a book or done anything like that. And Bob Panzer was the president, and he was about to leave. And I was at the position, he okayed it. I wrote him a letter. I wrote him a letter. And I told him, I said, I really appreciate it. I said, because I have really worked hard and I haven't had the time to do some of these things that they want. But anyway, I did get it. I also complimented him at the same time because he was president when that Kent State thing was. And I still remember a couple of meetings on the Oval at noon. You didn't know what the kids were going to do. You just didn't know what they were going to do. And he just kept a kind of a low profile. And I always felt that he was instrumental in keeping peace on campus. There was one student who got up at one of those meetings. I went over to campus on the Oval. A student from California got up and talked to the students, and he was very good. He said, I hope you don't do anything drastic. He said, I come from California. I know how disruptive things like this can be on a campus and so forth. He said, you have a wonderful situation here. Don't do anything to destroy it. And you know, I think from another student, they really took it to heart. And I just gave them a answer to the credit. Kind of an exciting time.
How did the University of Montana affect or shape the person that you are today?
Well, I think it had a big impact. the fact that I was ambitious enough to go back to work, for instance, because, and I'm still very much interested in libraries and do reading all the time, and I just can't imagine how I do it. I couldn't read, because it's one of the most important things in my life to read. And I have read to my grandchildren when they go low. I've read and read and read to them because I want them to. You know, I wanted them to like books, and they do. They like books. And that's important to me. And I credit the university giving me the background.
What advice would you want to give to today's university teachers or students?
Oh, Annie. Oh, I don't think I'm the person to give them any advice. I think they do pretty well. I really do.
Any other observations, insights, memories, stories? Oh, I think that's a great, great
I'll get the
story.
Picture and show it.
I'd like to see it.
Okay. Because, actually, it's Deb and Chandler who started calling me that, and he still does it. He still does it. So, well, we, at the time I was not everything I think was important was that our faculty within the library was really a closely knit group of people. We would go to state conferences, and we were good about attending meetings and so forth, but we also had such good times together. And we just really, I can still remember somebody from Bozeman faculty saying, "You people just have a best friend when you come to conferences," but it's because we were pretty close to knit group. We had a good time. We got a lot of the meetings too, you know. Sometimes you look back and it sounds like, gee, we really did have a good time, but we went to the meetings religiously. We were being paid to go, so we really did. It was a good time. I really loved the time. I felt they did very well by me.